a God who understands the joys and the sorrows. And that psalm expresses that, that God leads us to green pastures. He even takes us through the valley of the shadow of death. He never leaves us, and he wants us to know that. And we will be thinking today of absent friends. And Sandy, we are very aware. Where's my Sandy? It's the anniversary of Terry's death yesterday. The flowers are in memory of him. So we really want to support people. We want to support widows and widowers. And we remember other loved ones that are now in the presence and the mercy of God. And we believe one day we will be united with them through Jesus Christ. And that's what knowing Jesus brings, that assurance, even if we face death, that we're not alone. Okay, very quick reading. Comes from Luke's Gospel. You'll know it well. And by the way, if you want to do a reading at the carols by candlelight next Sunday evening, you're confident enough to do that, could you have a little word in my shell like? And we will try and fit you in through the Christmas period. So that's children or youth or adults. We read this about the birth of Jesus and how appropriate at a service to bring children in dedication. At that time, the Emperor Augustus ordered a census to be taken through the Roman Empire. When this first census took place, Quirinius was the governor of Syria. Everyone then went to register himself, each to his own town. Joseph went from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to the town of Bethlehem in Judea, the birthplace of King David. Joseph went there because he was a descendant of David. He went to register with Mary, who was promised in marriage to him. She was pregnant, and while they were in Bethlehem, the time came for her to have her baby. She gave birth to her first son, wrapped him in strips of cloth, and laid him in a manger. There was no room for them to stay in the inn. Okay, we've said today is the season of Advent. Thank you. I've trained him well. Thank you, Jeff. You always have somebody in the audience that, you know, can give you the right answer. It's a season when we focus, as we've said, on waiting. And if we can ping on to the next one. We're thinking about waiting for the coming of Jesus. And we've just read about Mary being heavily pregnant and about to give birth. We're also thinking, because Jesus is the Saviour of the world, about the time when he will return at a day and an hour that we don't know. We're thinking about his coming, hence the word Advent. We light these candles, and we've now lit three of them. We'll do a fourth one next Sunday and then one on Christmas Day, just as a good visual aid, really, that the light increases the closer we get to Jesus, and our light grows. And although it is very dark in the world, may the light increase as the darkness increases towards the return of Jesus. We're on a journey, as Liz has said. We're on pilgrimage, not some sort of spiritual sightseeing. We are daily on pilgrimage, and we need light to walk by. It's really difficult, isn't it? If you get up at night and there's no lights on and you're going to the bathroom to go to the toilet, you could fall down the stairs. You need a light on. How many of you still have night lights on your stairs? How many keep a light on? Some of you do, yes. Okay, we need light to walk by. And the baby who was born in Bethlehem is no longer in a manger. As he grew up, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." That's an amazing claim. If we think about Mary and Joseph, we know that they were travelers looking, and they were looking for a city. And the city they were looking for was, Liz has told you right from the beginning, Bethlehem. They were coming from Nazareth towards the town, it really was just a town, of Bethlehem. And they wanted a place of welcome. They were exhausted. You know how it is when you're really tired. All you want to do is find somewhere warm and safe and dry and protected. And they were looking for a place of welcome and safety so that Mary particularly could have her baby. And on their journey, I'm sure, especially however long it took, towards the darkness coming of evening, they needed a safe place because it was quite a dangerous journey. They didn't choose to travel at this time of the year, but because there was a census and that was the law of the land, Joseph had to go and be registered and the details of his family. The census, or an enrolment, tells us in Luke chapter 2, was the occasion for this journey to Bethlehem, where Jesus was born. And it was from a decree of Augustus and the Greek-Roman word. So the Romans were the ones very much in charge. But this seems to be according to Jewish practice. It was carried out in Palestine by Herod, and probably, as I said, the Jewish way. So they went to the home city of the dad, the father in the family. And we know that this family didn't stay very long at all. Maybe weeks, maybe months, we don't know, in Palestine, in Bethlehem, because they had to go as refugees into which country did they go into? Does anybody know? Can they put their hand up? Where did they go as refugees from Palestine? Katie? They went into Egypt, okay? Probably shouldn't do that. Where were you born? Can you put your hand up? If you were born in London or nearby, so that counts as Essex or all those, wave your hands. I shouldn't have mine up. Where were you born, Sarah? You don't know? By your mum? Oh, she was, yes, all right. All right. You sort of came together at that moment. All right. Can you put your hand up and tell me if you were born in another city or somewhere like that, not London? Dursley. Where? Gloucester. Very nice cheeses. Lola, he was a Londoner, wasn't he? Where were you born, Lola? Lagos, I've heard of it. Tokes, Manchester, because she's called Tokes, so that means born out of her own country. So she's born in Manchester. So you were born in London, I think. Amanda? Ottawa in Canada. Brilliant. Rosemary? Cambridge, spoken. What, in Ely or in Cambridge? In Cambridge, right. Aggie, where were you born? Where? São Paulo. St. Paul's. São Paulo, right. Anybody else, another city? Sorry, Helen. I'm so sorry. Oh, no, I shouldn't say that. Sheffield, still. Pete? In Japan. Anne? The Isle of Man, where the cats haven't got tails. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Okay. So the question is, if there was a census, you would all have to travel back to the city or the place of your birth. You get the idea, don't you? I would have to travel 6,310 miles. I would have to go via France, Spain, Algeria, Niger, Tanzania, or Niger in between Niger and Tanzania, and into the land of my birth and the city of my birth, which is Kampala in Uganda. Okay, so it's a good job I'm not walking like Mary and Joseph. Even flying, it would take about 8.5 hours, probably longer in the Heathrow and wherever. Okay, so you would have to go. Okay, next slide. Nazareth to Bethlehem. Isn't it great when the Holy Spirit's working? Because Liz didn't know, I didn't know she was going to do the thing about how far is it and so on. The journey from Nazareth to Bethlehem would probably be via Samaria and Jerusalem. If you were walking healthily, the max that you could do it, you might do it in 4 days. How many miles, put your hand up, we won't have kilometres this time, how many miles approximately would it be from Nazareth? No, you can't answer, David. You've answered one already. You looked this up, haven't you? How many miles from Nazareth, where they went to Bethlehem? Oh, come on, join in. Help me out. The service will last longer if you don't answer. Katie, you've answered one you can't answer. Have a guess. Have a guess. Go. 400. Did you walk 100 miles a day then? You're pretty impressive. About 80, all right? About 80 miles. But of course, because Mary was pregnant and presumably utterly exhausted, it probably would have taken longer than 4 days to do it. The Bible doesn't tell us anything about them travelling with a donkey, but it is likely that because Joseph was a carpenter, he would have had wood and tools and everything he needed, and maybe Mary was able to do a saddler on the donkey. Okay, so about 75 miles from Nazareth to Jerusalem, and then another 6 miles or so. So a difficult journey. If she wasn't feeling very well, maybe it took them a week. Where did Mary and Joseph stay overnight on the journey? Well, we just don't know. But they were probably travelling with a lot of other people for safety. So all these Christmas cards where you just see Mary and Joseph, you know, on the donkey, were highly unlikely. For safety, they would have travelled with many people, maybe a 12th of the population of Nazareth, going down to Bethlehem. They would have had to travel like that. We know that it became their custom to go every year up to Jerusalem, so it's a route that they would have known well, a bit like EastEnders going to Southend. You know, you sort of knew it off by heart. And so they knew this road. Travelling through Samaria, where they were not popular, because there was all sorts of racial hatred going on between Jews and Samaritans, and it may have been very difficult, but they arrived. Just think about that journey, how far you would walk, but it was a tough journey. And they arrived, like Abram before them, Joseph and Mary were looking for a city, on this occasion a real city. But we read in the Bible about people looking for a city whose builder and maker is God, somewhere safe, somewhere where the light shines, because believe it or not, you're often safer in the city than you are in certain other places. There may be walls around it for a start off. So the scripture tells us that the city was so busy that they could not find a comfortable place to stay. The first people they would go to, as always, is family. They would have expected to stay in their family, the ancestral homes. At that time in Bethlehem, those that were resident, I won't ask you to guess again, it could have been between 300 and 1,000, probably only 1,000 people. And suddenly all these other people arrived, which is why when the slaughter of the innocents happens, you're probably talking 20 babes. It seems that even Joseph's family, though, couldn't put them in the guest room. They were all filled up. And they needed a place of refuge. There were local midwives to help them, no doubt, but they needed a place of refuge. And we know that baby Jesus was laid to rest in a manger with the animals around. And Luke's gospel tells us that there was no room in the... But that may not be what it means at all. Cataluma, the word that's used, may mean an inn, or it could be what's called a caravanserai, which is a house round a courtyard which the donkeys or other animals could be put in. We don't know quite what it was, but it could have just been a part in the house where they kept the animals. Might have been a cave, might have been the lower part, but the house was packed, and this woman needed some privacy. And so is the story of God becoming a human being, but born not in a palace, but born with the animals and the family around and put in a manger. This is the story of Christmas, that God became a human being. And by the time of the arrival of the Magi, they were in the house. Christians and Muslims think that the spot the manger actually was is now covered by the Church of the Nativity. It's a pretty good guess. Now to finish, it is amazing that though Jesus says he is the light of the world, he then says to all his followers that they are the light of the whole world. And what he is doing is for the whole world. And that we are to come from every country, every people group, every ethnic group, every language to worship God through Jesus. And that we must go to all peoples. So I have a question. If we're now told that we are to be the light of all the world, what does that really mean? And my question is this one. Can we decide from this that we as followers of Jesus are to offer a welcome and safety to others in our family, to travellers, to pilgrims, to strangers, or even refugees? I'll ask in a minute if anybody, they can see in front of there, but anybody now knows where this statue is. So I leave you with a question. I'm not giving you an answer. If you call yourself, if I call myself a follower of Jesus, how do you feel about the fact that we are to be the light of the world? How do you feel about this story that Jesus was offered a welcome in a crowded place and laid in a manger? Someone gave him a place. What does that mean for us as communities who follow Jesus, as churches? What does it mean for our homes and our families? You or I may feel that we have no room, but surely there must be room at our tables for family and for strangers as well. We're communities of privilege. Can we say there's no room and not even offer a manger? So what will we offer? This Christmas and 365 days of the year, I suggest we are to welcome family, we are to welcome friends and show hospitality. Food bank, we desperately need more food to give to those who are in food poverty. So if you can bring dried and long life goods in, we would like them, we will get them to the food banks or hand them out ourselves. Growth Night Shelter is carrying on through this time of the year. And has an amazing record of how God has provided for that and the changes and the stories that have been shown. London Hosting, where people are welcoming migrant peoples, people who need refuge. There's much that's happening, but we have to give our answer. Do we deduce from this story that our lives are to offer a welcome and safety to others if we are the light of the world? This is called the Homeless Jesus. And you can see the nails in the feet and other things. It's made out of bronze. I love bronze statues and things. Does anybody know where it is? There are actually lots of them. First made in Canada. They've been in America and different parts of the world. It's been in London, but then people said they didn't want it, particularly. So the homeless Jesus has just been offered a home in Manchester. But it's rather interesting that the people in that church say how uncomfortable it makes them feel, but it spurs them on to be welcoming, because it's that key question. If we think of that person as Jesus coming, not just as somebody that we think is a pain or a nuisance or an interloper or not worthy of being here, then it will probably colour our response. We will probably try and respond differently. We can't do it all on our own, but we can decide what we can do and what we can do in groups of people and as a society. So I think the challenge still comes with that story. So may God give us grace to be hospitable and welcoming and kind and wise in our response. And there's some immediate responses we can do by buying somebody a cup of tea or offering them some food or something, but there's bigger responses, aren't there, that we need to do in the world, worldwide, because of what's happening as far as migration and everything goes. It's got to be a worldwide response, not just individual countries. Okay, so we thank God for that. I'm going to give you some notices in a second, and we're going to sing. Liz, you'll have to decide if we're going to have the candle song or see the star. But we're talking